Okay, cousin, welcome to Coco Conjure. Here we talk about all things hoodoo, folklore, and spiritual journeys. My goal is to give foundation to the novice and inspiration to the advanced practitioner. If you have not guessed already, my name is Coco. Well, cousin, it's that time of the month. So gather up your tea or turn up your car radio, because today we dive into some folklore. Normally, I give you some Daryl Cumber Dance or some Richard M. Dorson or a little bit of Auntie Hurston, but your cousin has been out and about enjoying this rainy but also very beautiful lead up to the summer equinox. And I got some new books on my shelf because that's what I do. I collect books. If you guys saw my bookshelf, there's a whole section next to my reading chair. I have the one you see in YouTube videos that have like the different holes in it, like the square holes. And it's a bookshelf. You can turn it on its side and it's very multi-purpose. I get it from IKEA. Anyway, there's like two cubby holes in this Calyx dedicated to books on my to-be-read list. Some of it's magical, some of it's spiritual, some of it is fiction that my best friend has been trying to get me to read for the longest time. But every time I go outside, I got a new book. So I was cleaning off that bookshelf and I found this book of poems by Phyllis Wheatley. If you don't know who that is, she's the first African-American published poet. I dare say she's the first Black American published, period. But though her poems are masterful, there are some underlining self-hatred concepts that I have a hard time reconciling. And I really want to read more about her. I really want to dive deeper into her story. Big Sis and I were just talking about her. So let's not touch Phyllis Wheatley today. I was going through some of those newer books as I was making room on my shelf, and I thought I would read from this book that I got from a book exchange with Tales from the Adirondacks. That's the mountains, not the chairs. And, you know, I thought I would get us out the south and the west a bit, and I thought that would be fun. But then I went shopping for plants with my mama, your auntie, at the Mount Vernon Flower Market, actually not too soon after we recorded that episode on roots and plants. And I came across this book called The Encyclopedia of Rutical Folklore, Plant Tales from Africa and the Diaspora by Natty Mark Samuels. Yeah. Encyclopedia of Rutical Folklore. Let's just say this book is not at all what I expected. When I was talking to that really nice lady from the bookstore, and, you know, chatting her up, I thought I was buying a book from her that was a collection of stories like Hurston, like Hyatt, like Dorson, like, Cumber Dance, like any other folklorist, right? Except this time, instead of it being about John Tales or, you know, why Black people have nappy heads or, you know, cunning plantation stories, that they would just be about plants, right? Encyclopedia of Rutical Folklore. This is folklore about plants, like a collection of folklore about plants. But as I cracked the spine and pushed Grace, my cat, off my armchair, I realized these are original haikus, poems, chants, stories from Natty Mark Samuels, like from the author themselves. And, you know, I think storytelling as a way to educate is brilliant. Obviously, I started doing a little bit of that myself in the other Tale originals. You know, I feel like it passes on knowledge, also having it like wrapped up in culture. And we did just finish this series on elements and what they look like in a functional, personal hoodoo practice. So, you know, we're going to talk about some rutical folklore. So in this book, again, Rutical Folklore, Plant Tales from Africa and the Diaspora, the writer, Samuels, they have a preface that explores the connection between plants and spiritual practices that are like pre-Abrahamic, you know, and they also explain this cast of characters that we may come across in the work, especially the Jah folk character or the local storyteller slash historian slash folklorist found in Kingston. This preface, though, is meandering, and I had to read it a couple times just to follow it. So I found the best summation of this work from Samuels is in the text that comes from the editor itself. And the editor's note simply reads this. Plants have roots, so do people. Rutical folklore is about the intertwining of human and plant roots and Africa and the African diaspora. Plants and people, when they grow with one another through the centuries, make stories, like the ones collected in the volume you are holding. Natty Mark Samuels has shaped these stories in many different ways. Some emerge as songs, some as call and response chants, some as haiku, some as dialogues, and some as prose fiction. Together, these different genres give a sense of the depth and richness of the soils in which these tales' roots lie. Diaspora itself is a botanical word, Greek for a scattering of seeds. In tracing the travels of seeds, Rutical folklore represents a wide-angle vision of African diaspora. Samuels tells how date fruits journeyed across Sudan and who brought arrowroot on a canoe from Venezuela. Some of the plants protagonists of these pieces, such as peanuts and oranges, may be daily companions for most of us. Others, like jatoba and amupafi, will probably need some introduction. We have written a brief botanical and historical description of each plant for you to read or skip as you like. Either way, we hope that setting science and story side by side in this encyclopedia will help show the limitations of a knowledge that comes only from the former. You can use Wikipedia to learn what a plant is, but only through stories can you find out who they are. Samuel's tales don't just help us come to know plants, they show plants helping us come to know ourselves. A baobab tree provides an overview of West African folklore, while African lettuce becomes a point of contact with the Nigerian painter Prince Twins 7-7. A trumpet tree duets the Crucian Carcio singer Mama Lenoa Watson and takes part in the triumphal procession of Queen Idia of Benin, all in a single instant. In the Encyclopedia of Rutical Folklore, plants are how African culture takes root in the present, with ancestors threading in and out. I love that introduction. Now, this baobab monologue they mention is very interesting, and I really wanted to read it to you guys, but it's way too long for this podcast. We can dive into that another time. I say to introduce ourselves to Samuels and this Rutical Encyclopedia, we just take in some brisk, crisp poems and stories. So this first one is titled The Rosemary and Cinnamon Chant. I want this to work. Feel she's the one for me. Bathe me in rosemary. Wishing for her, I don't pray for money. Bathe me in rosemary. Addition of cinnamon and a little sprinkle of cloves. All's bright and clear. There's no mystery. Bathe me in rosemary. Just her and I and eternity. Bathe me in rosemary. Addition of cinnamon and a little sprinkle of cloves. Hey, y'all, cousin, I wonder what the rosemary was used for. Right? You picked up the obvious love work, right? Bathe me in rosemary, addition of cinnamon, and a little sprinkle of cloves. In the section about rosemary, it's kind of like a biography of rosemary, that science married with the story. It says this, it says, the herb is popular in the African diasporic religions of Candomblé and Umbanda. Practitioners might use rosemary in leaf baths. The leaves are kneaded in cool waters, which is then poured the water over the head of the patient. While strong herbs like rue and cloves cleanse the patient of negative energies, sweeter ones like rosemary attract prosperity, happiness, and love. Rosemary can also serve as a concentration and memory aid and a remedy for headaches, which I've tried that once at rosemary tea. As it wasn't a tension headache, it worked pretty well for me. And I needed a high concentration of rosemary, though, I will say that. Where was I? In parts of the Caribbean, the name rosemary or wild rosemary can refer to Crantin linearis, a very similar shrub, the leaves of which may be burned to ward off dupies. Dupies are haints or ghosts. Rosemary is associated with many orishas, particularly the hunter Oshosi. But both rosemary and cinnamon may be used in baths of Oshun, Orisha of love. Yeah. So that makes sense, I guess, right? You want to do a love bath? You want to attract some lady to you? Then you need some rosemary, a little cinnamon, and a sprinkle of cloves, right? I gotta say, I use rosemary to as like a protective thing normally. I do use it for like happiness and to alleviate like heavy moods in my home, which is great. I've never used it as a memory or concentration aid. I wonder if it would be good to burn that or make some sort of incense out of that when you do a divination. Normally, in hoodoo, like in our space, when you want an incense that will help you with divinatory or psychic practices, you use star anise. So I guess it might be worth looking into like a blend of star anise, rosemary, and maybe one other herb. Like I'm trying to think if there's another herb. Mugwort grows pretty well where I live. Mugwort also helps with like dreaming, lucid dreaming, or like am I thinking of the right herb? Hold on, sorry, I had to grab my field notes. Yeah, mugwort can be used. It's known as dream weaver. It can be used for and to enhance dreams, intuition, spiritual connection, but also, you know, all the other things, protection, blah, 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 right? So that's it. I find that interesting. Pretty cool. Okay, back to my outline here so I know what I'm doing next. Okay, the next tale, it reads like a fond memory of Samuel's, like something Samuel's went through when they were in Kingston, listening to the Jah folk or the storyteller. I think the Jah folk is like a character specifically introduced into the story, into this encyclopedia to tell stories. This particular story is called Tale of a Pea Harvest. I wish the whole of Kingston could have fitted into Papan Square on that night that became a comedy night, live and direct, right there in our beloved place. And the theme, carrying humor, was Anansi, generating one of the legendary evenings in Papine Square. It began with a story told by Jah folk about the arachnid supremo and yams. Following this, one of the vendors told one about himself. Then, like a relay team, others took the baton and told a tale of eight legs, offering the funniest they knew. Another vendor gave us one. Shanty man passing by shared another. So did a neighbor of Tommy's and mine. a UWI student, a local pastor, and so on, and each tale topped up the laughter pool like a sparkling stream feeding the Spangled River. As he was delivering a workshop at Popine Square the following morning, Jafolk told the final one to conclude the evening. Another tale from Greed Gorge, where the protagonist always endeavors to indulge himself at the gorging time in his secret ravine. He told a tale of a pea harvest and the decision to die. Yes, Anansi pretends to pass away, an elaborate ruse involving a funeral. Before he expires, he asks for a hole to be cut in the coffin and a pot of water placed on the grave. Although frustrated, Aso, his long-suffering wife, goes along with it. She believes him when he says it's a way to guard the harvest from animals and humans. But as you've guessed, he sneaks out every night, boiling and enjoying a supper of peas. Aso and the family are perplexed at the case of the disappearing peas, all except the eldest son, who has become wise to his father's shenanigans. He makes a figure using a stump of tree, branches, tar, and a hat. The moonless night, Anansi emerges from his place of ploy, thinking it's a friend come to visit him. He embraces the effigy and is stuck. Next morning, running from public shame and damnation, he hides in the roof beams where he tends to reside to this day. Jafolk wondered whether her family and community held a vigil for poor Aso, each one lighting a candle and saying a prayer for the committed wife who's tearing out her last hair. Bring Me to My Knees, with his escapade of peas, generates high fever. I sputter and wheeze. I beg you, Creator, watch over that husband of mine. Watch over Anansi, I beg you, please. One hustle after another, quick as a sneeze, he is lava running. I pray for cool breeze. I beg you, Creator, watch over that husband of mine. Watch over Anansi, I beg you, please. To all of us blessed to have gathered there, it seemed like God said, let laughter be the dominant activity in Popine Square this evening. And so it was. What a fun tale. I do honestly wish we could have gotten the full Anansi story. I don't know about you, cousin, but I didn't grow up with Anansi or Aunt Nancy stories. By the time I came around, it was all European nursery rhymes or songs of John Henry. And it wasn't until I got much older that I discovered folklore, like traditional Black American folklore. So it's fun to get a glimpse of this kind of storytelling around the iconic weaver of stories. And apparently this story can have like different harvestables in the starring role. It doesn't have to be peas. But the poem at the end is pretty fire, right? My favorite line is, one hustle after another, quick as a sneeze, he is lava running, I pray for a cool breeze. You know, we all know someone who's like that, just runs hot into every situation, causes a chaos in their wake. You know what? Something just clicked in my head. In the snippet of the Anansi story, we hear that his son builds an effigy out of a tree stump and tar and pine and a hat. And then the idea that Anansi is like stealing family harvest and taking it just for himself, it reminds me of the story of the tar baby, which is a classic Black American story. But instead of Anansi being the clever, cunning one, you know, stealing the peas, it's in the tar baby, it's Brer Rabbit, Brother Rabbit, who is like stealing milk or butter or something from either a group of animals or just one animal. I think I told that story in the very first like formalized Other Tales story. And I think it was like a fox. The rabbit, Br'er Rabbit, was a doctor, and he would pretend like someone was calling for his help, and then he would go off and steal like milk or something. And then the fox figures out what it is, and the fox builds a tar baby. And just like how Anansi gets stuck embracing this friend on the road made out of tar, the Br'er Rabbit, he fights the tar. He's like, don't just sit there and stare at me. I'm a mollywop you. And then he proceeds to give him the 1-2 kicks and punches and gets stuck in the tar. Wow. I think, I know it's obvious, but a lot of times people say that Br'er Rabbit stories are just, Br'er Rabbit stories or Cunning John stories are like, come from a root of Anansi stories, you know, like they come from that same pathway of storytelling, that same cunning protagonist, you know, and it's just how different people across the Caribbean and in the American continent have decided to interpret those stories and share those stories, you know. Anyway, last story. This one is called The Tale of Lemongrass. I will talk to you about it on the other side. Walking past Tasty's, Jafolk bought a tube of incense from another Ra's elder passing through Papine. And by the time he got to the square and lit a stick, he had changed the story in his head to the one about Sadaka. While lemongrass, which we call fever grass, meandered amongst us, he told a tale of generosity and the reality of karma. A tale told by the Swahili who traded frankincense and gold across the Indian Ocean. So this Sadaka, a gentle soul, is traversing the lands in search of his long-lost brothers. On his way, on three occasions, he shares what he has with those in need, with birds, spirits, and insects. And after each encounter, as a token of gratitude, each group gives him something he can signal to them with if ever he's in danger. An incense stick. Jafolk's telling of this story produced what became known as the aromatic debate, as most of those gathered in the square expressed a personal preference. I heard votes for cinnamon, a couple said lavender, someone stated that sage is good for easing off pressure, another that rosemary is an aid to concentration, and so it went, tangerine, sandalwood, musk. Jafolk said his favorite was coconut and mango, the sweetest combination. And with that, he returned us to the story where our hero is entangled in a dilemma. For a chance of marrying the princess, the standard reward in episodes of Challenge featuring a young woman, no courting, just ceremony, he has to summon three of the highest hurdles ever set. One is the felling of the baobab tree. After brainstorming and headache, he thinks of the insects. Lighting a stick of the incense they'd given him, he summons them to his aid. They gnaw through the tree unseen, before the spectators gather. Later, in front of everyone, with one chop of sadakas, the tree falls. The question of what he lit to call his new friends set off Aromatic Debate Part 2, as people voiced their opinions about the fragrance of SOS, patchouli, jasmine, cherry, rose. From then until now, whenever I've heard the word lemongrass or seen it somewhere, my first thought is always of that evening in the square when we spoke about aroma. Oh, man. A great story, to be sure, for sure. But, you know, in my spiritual experience and my storytelling experience, a low-hanging fruit was missed here. like the link between lemongrass, vervain, and Van. But that's definitely within the Black American spiritual system, such as hoodoo. And this story is definitely taking place in the Caribbean, because when they say Jah folk, they're talking about a storyteller in Kingston. In the little bio about lemongrass, it talks about lemongrass as medicine and Africa and the Caribbean at large. And it talks about lemongrass as an insect repellent when used in citronella candles, but also how it attracts other bugs like bees. But nowhere in lemongrass's encyclopedia entry, the scientific entry, do they talk about it in Van oil. To put it short, Van oil is an old school traditional oil formula. You can make it yourself, but the old school formulas are very closely guarded. And unless you are either like the manufacturer of it or are of a particular lineage where your mentor or your teacher, your professor will teach you, it's not something you can get right for sure. Right. I make a Van oil for myself. That's not one of those oils that I share with other people, but I do make it for myself. But mostly, Van, it uses lemongrass and vervain. I read somewhere, and take this with a grain of salt, because I can't remember where I read it, but I read somewhere that the name Van is actually a bastardization of the French Creole pronunciation of the word vervain. Right. And I knew about lemongrass already without having to look it up. And I did cross-reference, of course. I always cross-reference things. But I knew about that because I think in Zora Neale Hurston's book, Mules and Men, in the back, it says Van. And then in, like, as a definition, it says lemongrass. That's it. That's all it says. Right. Those two notes, lemongrass and vervain, become the main actors in a Van oil. So what do you use Van for? Well, you use it to draw in good things. You can use it to anoint mojo bags or other talismans and amulets. It clears away evil. You can put it in a wash to cleanse a space. The list goes on and on for Van oil. I find, though, that in books like this one, that when they talk about Africa and her diaspora, we sometimes, as hoodoos, as Black Americans, get overlooked, right? Especially when it's talking specifically about, when it's talking specifically about spirituality, hoodoos get overlooked constantly. Hoodoo is hard to reconcile, though. I suppose it's not as clean a concept as, say, Orisha traditions found in the Caribbean and in the Americas, or as well known as, say, Haitian or Louisiana voodoo, right? It's this weird amalgamation. Hoodoo, the spiritual practice, is this weird amalgamation of things that can't be easily traced back to our African roots, right? So like mojo bags, we can trace back to Nkisi, but that takes work, right? Working with brooms, that can be traced back to West African, Central African practices. But like certain things we do just aren't. It's very American, right? And when they think American, they don't think Black American they don't think that, because the connection isn't so obvious, it's not ever included or mentioned. Right. But we have our own thing out here, and we have a claim to those rudical tales too. So lemongrass, yes, it can help Sadaka and winning the hand of a princess, but also here in the States, you put it in a Van oil and you use it to anoint talismans, amulets, feed a mojo bag, clear away evil. You know, there's stories there as well. Okay. I had fun with our new author. I thought that was pretty cool. I will keep this in rotation when I go to look for folklore for our other tales section every month, because there are some pretty longer ones in there that could probably stand on their own. But so far we've reached the part of the podcast where I scour the internet and I try to find questions to answer. So the first one says, best hoodoo herbs to grow in the South, specifically Central Florida. Question. Immediately, there's a couple herbs that come to mind, pumpkins, mint, and morning glories for the root. I'm more curious about cultivating the non-kitchen herbs, blue flag root, devil shoestring, abre camino. There are some of the ones I'm curious of. It might take a while to develop my green thumb, so I'm starting with some life potted plants. I'm guessing they mean live potted plants, and those starters that have the tray with a dozen cells for germinating. Oh, so they're going to like sprout their own. Okay. So could you grow blue flag, devil shoestring, and abre camino? Yes, you could. But typically we source them. Typically they're sourced. So you go out to where those things are and you get it straight and direct from nature, or you go to a botanica where someone is buying it. Now, if you go to the botanica where someone is buying it, that means that someone grew it there. Like someone grew it, right? You could probably go to Etsy and get it that way too. I've never thought to grow like devil's shoestring or abre camino. But I guess you could. For those wondering, the reason why they mentioned the root of a morning glory is because the root of morning glories is John the Conqueror root. I will tell you that on my balcony, I currently have an angelica plant and a comfrey plant, which are non-kitchen herbs used in our practice. The angelica is a little weird because it's just a really tall leafy thing right now. It won't flower until I think it said it's second year out there. So I have to let it grow, die, and come back again before I can get a flower. And the reason why that's important to me is because when we use angelica, we don't use the leaf. We use the root, use angelica roots, right? Hold on, angelica roots. Let me get my field journal again. Hold on. Okay, so there's a lot going on here. Angelica root breaks curses, hexes, removes jinxes, offers a shield against harmful influences. So there's that, like repels evil spirits and malevolent entities. Also, apparently somewhere when it comes to divination and enhancing intuitions, you smoke the leaves to increase clairvoyance and encourage visions, dreams, that kind of thing. There's a pathway to heaven with angelica root, and it's said to represent like an angel's protection over you. Can be used to uplift a spirit, mend a broken heart, give you some peace, you know. Let's see, what else do I say here? And enhances the power and strength of women, so there's that. So I use the root. Here's why I write shit down, because I did not know that. Well, I guess I knew and forgot that you could smoke the leaf to enhance your ability to dream and vision, like smoke it. I think now that I'm growing it, I'll try that, but I definitely wouldn't do that with anything I found in a botanica. And then comfrey. Comfrey is used in healing balms. I talk a little bit about that in the episode with my mom when we talk about plants. So I'll give that a try. But back to the Angelica, I mean, I want it to flower because once it flowers, it seeds, and then I can pull the seeds out and plant again. But until then, like, I can't use the roots, right? I need to make sure that the roots stay in the pot or else it won't come back next time, next growing season. And I don't have any seeds, right? So I have to let it grow and then flower, and then I collect the seeds, and then I'll germinate them on my own. But yeah, I'll be honest with you. I never thought to grow Devil's Shoestring or Abre Camino. I have thought to grow Morning Glories, but it's a very specific type of Morning Glory you want to get. And so look up the scientific name for Hydra on the Conqueror root before you just go buy any Morning Glory. But you could. You definitely could. You could definitely grow that stuff. Okay, next question. What are some of the most protective plants to plant around your house? Moving to a rough area, and I want to protect myself and my house as much as possible. Protective plants. So you want something that's going to ward off evil. So we're going back to the rosemary. Technically speaking, I guess that could be some angelica too, because you can do that, but I've never heard of that being done before. Mint also, will do that as well. I'm remembered to always put that in a pot. Don't put that in the ground. But specifically I'm thinking of a rue plant. I would keep rue plants near my door if I could, or on a windowsill. Rue is said to, ward off evil, specifically the evil eye as well. So, and like cleanse of evil. So even if you don't want to harvest it all the time, I would definitely have a root plant in my home. My sister mentioned that to me. She had called me one day after being out and about and shopping, and she was talking to this lady who is Mexican by descent, and she was telling this lady that her workplace feels weird. There's a lot of heavy things going on in there. And the shopkeeper, the woman, tells her to get an aruta plant. And my sister calls me. She's like, have you ever heard of this? And I'm like, I think so. Hold on. So I go look in the field notes because I never remember anything. And I'm like, aruta is another name for rue. It's we know that plant. We use that plant. It's another name for rue. So yeah, rosemary grows like a bush. That's a nice thing to have nearby your home. And a rue plant inside would be great as well. Okay, cousin. It is 11:57 at night. One of my friends asked me to join him in a zombie killing campaign. And I need to get this episode edited and up in like the next 7 hours. So, whoa, you know, so let's get out of here. But before we get out of here, cousin, I want to let you know that you deserve the world. I liked the idea that they talked about our roots and the roots of the plants, the nature around us are intertwined. That's so true. And wherever you are, wherever that might be, whatever you have access to, try to get your hands in the dirt, touch a plant, right? Cultivate just one. Maybe it's an aloe plant or a succulent, or if you have a really bad brown thumb, just get a snake plant. And you'll find that tending for a plant, like the spirit of a plant and tending to its needs, will give you some realizations about yourself and about the spiritual world around you and about, you know, how we have to tend to our own roots and what do we need? How much sun do we need? How much water do we need? How much whatever we need in order to survive too, you know? So plant some herbs this summer, right? Get you some flowers, get you a snake plant or a money tree or whatever. And just know that as you tend to that plant, it tends to you. And that when you call for your blessings, cousin, they will come to you. I'll see you guys next time.